I had just completed CrossFit 17.2. I sat down and ate dinner. I was relaxing and I had actually worked a full day. At 9 o'clock, my water breaks and I go into labor and it gets increasingly more and more painful. I like knew what contractions were, what the timing was, how it's supposed to be. And I was like, something's really wrong here because it's not supposed to be this painful.
Are you done with being that pregnant or postpartum mom in the gym who is always stuck on the sidelines feeling horrible, saying, how come no one ever told me this? Are you ready to finally say no to a mom life filled with excess weight, injury, overwhelm, and fatigue? Then help is here. Welcome to the Strong Moms Fitness Podcast, where we dive deep into the information you need to be the strongest woman in and out of the gym, even if you are a mom. If you are done going through your pregnancy or postpartum fitness journey clueless and unprepared, if you are ready to commit and say yes to being that badass fit mom who is shredded and stronger than before the baby, well, listen up. Because this is where we talk about all of the things your doctor or trainer never told you about, so that you can achieve the body you want and take your athletic strength and performance to the next level. Get ready, because here's your host, Daisy Bravo.
Hello, hello. And I want to welcome you to the Strong Moms Fitness Podcast this week. I've got Samantha Pritchard on the show. She is a total wonder woman. She is a really great birth story that she'll be sharing with us. She's also an author of a children's book called I Can Be Fit. She discovered CrossFit and became this fitness enthusiast, promoting movement and a healthy lifestyle. In her spare time, when not running after her kids or working out, she is always on the lookout for the best donuts around. And she lives in New York City. I want to welcome Samantha to the show. I didn't know that her birth story was so traumatic, so you're not going to want to miss this. She is just such a strong woman, and I am so glad to have her on the show. So thanks for sticking around. You're not going to want to miss a single moment. Welcome, Samantha, to the Strong Moms Fitness Podcast. I am so excited to have you on the show. Now, I understand that you have some interesting birth stories, and I'd love to give you some time to chat with us about your birth stories and how they differed.
So the first one, I had just completed CrossFit 17.2. I sat down and ate dinner. I was relaxing and I had actually worked a full day. So a full day for me starts at 6 a.m. I'm in the school by 7:30 and I work until about 5 o'clock and I go to a CrossFit class at 6, did the workout. And at 9 o'clock, my water breaks and basically I go into labor and it gets increasingly more and more painful. And being as an educator as I am, I like knew what contractions were, what the timing was, how it's supposed to be. And I was like, something's really wrong here because it's not supposed to be this painful. And I was like, contractions are supposed to go from 10 minutes to 8 to 7 to 3. And I was like, these contractions are 10 minutes at a time and they're the most painful things. I couldn't breathe in between them. Like my husband had to put my pants on for me because there was no time in between contractions. And I was like, this is happening and I don't understand why. We went to the hospital. They told me I wasn't even 3 centimeters dilated and they sent me back home. And so I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. My husband knew I wanted a natural. He's like, you can do it. Don't worry. It's just like a hard wad and you can just power through. And I'm like, but it's been 14, 16 hours. I can't breathe. I don't understand. And little did I know that it was like back labor. Plus she was in an awkward position. I went into the hospital again and they're like, you're only 4 centimeters dilated. And it was like 7 hours later. So I was like, I don't think I can do this anymore. So I tapped out and got an epidural and was able to just relax and sleep because I hadn't slept. I literally was up for, I don't know, 25, 30 hours before I got the epidural. And I went to sleep, dilated. And then when it was time to push, she came out in 3 pushes. I had a huge third degree tear, but she flew out and knocked over the betadine. So it was everywhere. And because she knocked it out, the nurse was like almost unable to catch her because she like flew out. She knocked something and it was just a crazy thing. So she came out fine. It was because of that tear and the stitches, it took a long time for recovery. And, you know, that was, I remember it being the most painful thing in the world. And I did not want to go through with it again. So I was like, I don't know if I can do it for the second one. But my husband got a doula and like she like worked with me through breathing exercises. We did a lot more yoga the second time around in pregnancy and just like being relaxed and like just being centered, calm whenever I wanted to do nesting. And daughter at the time helped by saying like, mommy, you're going to be okay. And the second one was like a textbook birth. So this is what it's supposed to feel like. The contractions came every 10 minutes, every 9, and it came closer. When it came to 3 minutes, I called my doula and the midwife and we all went to the birthing center together. I was able to birth in the birthing center and not just be in a regular hospital because of the epidural. And then it was a textbook birth. Like I got to go in the bath. I got to hold on to the sheet, go on a bouncy ball. There were so many different things that I was able to do because it was one of those like zen births. I was able to do it without medication. And I think I was so proud of myself for doing it. When she came out, like I held her. Someone brought in Shake Shack. So it's burgers and fries for me because I hadn't had that in a long time and I was eating. And then I think the most traumatic part of this story is like after about 20 minutes, they measured her oxygen levels and they're like, this is not looking good. And I was holding her and then they took her away. And I had no real thought about, oh yeah, her oxygen level is low. They basically said they're going to do some testing. I was like, okay, like this happens all the time. My other daughter had been in the NICU for jaundice. So I was like, oh, there she was just like sunbathing for a couple of hours. And this was going to be the same. Like she just needs a little bit of oxygen. It was like 3 hours later, I was like, can I see her? They're like, no, you cannot. We're working on her. My father had brought my daughter to the hospital to meet her baby sister. And then they're like, this is probably not a good time. Have them go. So they went home and I was like getting a little more concerned. And my husband's, are we going to be okay? Can we see her? What's going on? And then the doctor came in and was like, we need to send her to a different hospital with a higher level of care. We had to intubate her because she was not breathing on her own. And we had the baby at 2:30. And so this is 6-7 o'clock that they're telling us, like, we had to intubate her. She was not breathing on her own. Do we have permission to send her to the next hospital? I, yes, please. Because if you cannot take care of her here, like we need to do that. And so at 7:30, I signed the paper. She gets taken in an ambulance on her own and is taken to uptown to a different hospital. And then I was like, but I'm here. Like my baby's over there. What are we doing to rectify this? Because I don't want to be there. And they're like, as a natural birth, like you still have a couple more hours to stay because you have 24 hours that you need to just be here. And I was like, but I would like to be next to my baby or at least see her. And so they're like, okay, we can authorize an ambulance ride. I'm sorry, there's no, if you want to cut that out. But they're like, we'll authorize an ambulance ride so that you can go into that hospital and stay there. However, you're going to have to pay for your own stay for that night because basically insurance doesn't cover it. It's a different hospital. I was like, okay, this is fine. So we go into the ambulance. It's about 9 o'clock. I get a call from the doctor from the other hospital and they're like, you need to come right now because we don't know if your baby's going to make it through the night. And I was like freaking out. I was like, I don't know how I had this magical, perfect birth. Everything was textbook. How could she have been sick? Whatever. I was like, I don't understand. I thought she just needed some oxygen. And they actually signed the papers for the ambulance. And so we take off and it's 10 o'clock at night. We're in the ambulance. They're going about 30 miles an hour or what feels like it. And then I'm noticing, so we're supposed to go from downtown to about 60th. We're noticing because the back of the ambulance has like a tiny window. So you're looking at the back of it. And I know New York City landscape. So we're going and I'm like, I'm looking at this bridge and I'm like, this bridge doesn't make sense. Like, why are we passing this bridge? Because we're going too far. And I like asked the driver, I'm like, hey, where are we going? She's at Cornell and that's on 60 something street. And he's like, no, you're going to Montefiore, which is in Bronx. And I'm like, this is a whole different borough. And by that time it's 11 o'clock and they're saying like, the baby's not going to make it through the night. So my husband and I are like sitting there nervous. And we're like, can you please check the paperwork? Is the baby is at Cornell? And we had to call the doctor, had the doctor talk to the driver and say, no, the baby's here. You need to turn the ambulance around and come back now. So it was another 20 minutes to the wrong direction, 20 minutes back in the right direction before we can get there. And so we went to see the baby finally. And they're like, she spat up blood 3 times. There's some sort of injury in her lung. She's unable to breathe on her own. There was like lots of complications. They called it PPHN, which is like some sort of lungs not turning on when she's thinking, I guess the body's thinking that it's still in the womb and it it's breathing through the umbilical cord and getting oxygen there. And so it took her about 3 weeks in the NICU to really fully breathe on her own and eat on her own. She was born at like 10 and a half pounds. So she was like the most gigantic baby in there. And I was livid because in my head, I was like, I did everything right this time. I did the breathing exercises. I relaxed. I didn't work out as intensely. And I just had all of that guilt of, but I did everything right. And still this happened to my baby. And thankfully, like after the first 2 days, there was a lot of testing, a lot of just lots of doctors telling me things and was not getting processed in my head, and spent a good amount of time at the hospital where I was worried that she wasn't able to survive. And they're like, after 4 days, she's looking better. So I'm like, obviously she's a 2-year-old now who's happy and off the walls, crazy. And I think back to that where I'm like, I didn't help hold her enough or something happened. And that amount of guilt led to a lot of things. So in terms of being a mom and like wanting the ideal birth, like I got my ideal birth, like being able to do it in a birthing center with incense and like music that you wanted. And then to have that result, I was just floored and devastated by the turn of the events and just being told your baby might not survive that night. And it's like this jarring thing that made me rethink a lot of my priorities and life in general.
It's a crazy story. So I'm sure in the moment you're just like freaking out. Time is going so slow and you want answers. After the fact, after things settled down, like how long did it take for you to process that, get over that trauma, that shock? Was that something that you had to process after the fact? Or yeah, that sounds like super traumatizing and emotional.
Yeah, I think like the processing really hard, because not only did I have to tell my parents and my daughter, like, oh, your baby sister's really sick. After that first night, like my parents were asking me questions that I didn't have answers to. And I was like, I don't know anything. And we can only pray that she survives the next day. I also, as an assistant principal of a high school, I worked up until the day that I was giving birth, and we were on spring break. There were lots of texts flying in of, did she come on her birthday? And like, how's everything? Is everything great at home? And it was, there's 60 other people wondering. And it's not, I didn't want to announce that her birth because I didn't know if she was going to survive. So it took me a long time to share on social media, like what happened. I think I wanted to know that she was in the clear to survive and be on her own breathing before I announce her birth. So I think there was a lot of anxiety, worrying, guilt that I put her down to eat a burger and fries after giving birth, that I was like, I knew it was not my fault, but what did I do to allow her to become so sick? Because it's just one of those freak accidents or freak events that happen after birth. There are no real causes of it. So I was reading a lot on Google, which is horrible because it has the most extreme things. And as a science teacher, I know how to read science research articles too, which like looking at the abstract and looking at like the actual studies that they had done on it. And I was like, this is just horrible. And so I think I process a lot by reading a lot and just trying to figure out what are the odds, how fast can she grow, get out of this, and what are the lingering effects afterwards, and like how am I going to deal with that as a mother. And yeah, I think I go full speed on knowing everything about it so that I can plan ahead and be that type A person.
And what would be your advice for someone that's gone through something that's traumatic like this out there? How can you ease someone's struggle or offer some support?
I think anybody who ends up as a NICU mom, it is probably one of the hardest first realities as a mom. This is your job now, and this is your baby's advocate. You are the person who's looking after it, in addition to all the nurses there and hospital, whatever, is all great. But you basically go on full speed of this is what it means to be a mom. And I think, I don't know if there's ever advice, but I think you have that innate love in you, and you will do anything and everything to make sure your baby's okay. So I don't think there's any sort of advice, because I know that there are going to be other NICU moms out there. It's more like you have the strength inside of you to learn and advocate and be a mom. And I think it's really weird because you're not just, oh, learning how to breastfeed or doing anything like that, but you're making sure that the diaper gets changed and all the medical information flows your way way and you have are most up to date with the progress that's being made. And what does it mean if this starts beeping or that starts beeping? And so I think it's in them to know what's happening and fight for their baby.
Yeah. Now, did you find that the nurses or doctors, they kept you in the loop? Or did you find that you had to take control, you had to at least attempt to take some control, be part of the process? Did they try and steamroll you did they work with you?
So there were instances, and because it was such a big hospital with rotating nurses and rotating doctors, I felt like I had to get to know who was on the case every day and see her chart and see what is happening with her and see what their plan is, so that when they changed over from doctor to doctor, the plan was seamless. I think they generally are great people who want to work with you. And at the same time, you want your baby at home. Like, you just want to know what are the next three things that they need to do so that you can take them home and be okay. I think there's this idea that one in my head, and my parents had said this, like, I have good insurance. So the longer they keep them there, then the longer they can bill for whatever insurance. And I was like, I don't think that's true. And then like my daughter was almost eating on her own and they're saying that she needed X amount of milliliters of formula to take down in order for her to go home, but she was not meeting that mark. And basically she was like a light eater. She would like to snack every 2 hours instead of the every three and have a bigger, fuller meal. And so like just noticing that and being with her all day of like what she's asking for made me realize, hey, actually the standards under the hospital regulations of like this many milliliters per 3 hours was not being met, but it is being met at 2 hours. Is there any flexibility there? And then I was like recording a lot of what was being fed and how she responded to it and tried to push that data towards it so that they would understand like, hey, this baby might be a little different and might not fall under standard practices to try to get her home.
Wow, that's great. You did have to step in there for a little bit. And that's awesome that you stood your place. And even though you didn't have your baby at home, your mom instincts still kicked in and you were there every step of the way. I love that. It's a beautiful story and pretty crazy story. And how's your daughter doing right now?
She's good. She is loving mimicking things in the CrossFit gym with us. She's great. I think she learns a lot from her big sister. So she's cool. Able to climb and jump and run and swing. And I think the only risk factor that we have lingering is that she will most likely have asthma in the end. But I think I'm very thankful for the nurses and doctors who noticed her lack of oxygen, because if we were in the 1990s or the 1980s, I would not have gotten home with the baby. So like just rewind 20 or 30 years back, like the technology would not be as good and they might not have saved her life or noticed it to save her life. And I'm just very thankful for modern medicine and all of the testing that they did and all the drugs that were administered so that she was able to build back that capability. And just if they had left it for 2 hours, if they had left it instead of about 20 to 30 minutes of checking in on her, it was an hour or 2 hours, there would have been brain damage and lack of oxygen to the brain and more developmental impacts. So I'm just very thankful that I was in a birthing center and had doctors all around to whisk her away.
Wow, amazing story. That's beautiful. And I'm so glad things turned out great for you guys. And sounds like you've got an amazing little family going on there. The family that works out together. That is pretty cool. Now, I wanted to change directions a little bit, and I know we've been talking for a little while, but I want you to talk about your children's book and what inspired you to write that book and what is it like to publish a book? That's an amazing feat.
Yeah. One of the things that I noticed after having Ruby, my second child, was that my kids wanted to work out with me. And because I'm not a competitive games athlete anymore, they can. And like they were mimicking some of the movements. And when I did box jumps, they would try to jump. And when we wanted to do burpees, they knew how to do burpees already because they loved flopping on the floor and jumping back up. And as an educator, I was always thinking of ways to teach them things, and what better way than through a book. And I had written out cards of this is what it looks like. And I would show them some cards sometimes and come do the workout with me. And we're going to do burpees or we're going to squat 10 times today. And so they would start mimicking me. And And I thought it would be great to put it together into a book. One of the things as a educator, student, or you see your kids read, and I don't know if other people have kids at the gym, but sometimes they don't work out with you and they're all over the place. And just thinking about how to share fitness with my kids and get them interested in it while reading and building literacy is important. I think we read books at home every night before they go to sleep. I try to read 5 books a day, knowing that they'll hear millions of words before they get into kindergarten. And it gives them that just language and basis for literacy later in life. So I think this book came about, it was like a cosmic coincidence of like COVID happened. I wanted to get them to move and to just read with me, have fun. Their pre-K or preschool was back on Zoom and it was everybody's in front of a screen all the time. I wanted them to read a book. And so I learned through the internet and all these other resources how to self-publish a book and print it. And so I had my friend illustrate it. I had this story in mind of just repeating these I can words, because sometimes my kids get into a rut of I can't do it. And I'm like, you can, like, how can we do it? And talking them through that, I really wanted to just like positively enforce that they're able to do anything they want to do. And so I started a lot of these statements with I can, and how can you do something that's really magnificent and really difficult and work towards it, a goal. And I found a printer out there. We illustrated, we created it, and like it became a book that got delivered, and it was amazing. I think it was one of my back burning in the background ideas where I'm thinking of like, how can I make sure that they fall in love with fitness at an early age so that they're not like just inundated with sports. And by the time they're adults, they don't really know how to work out. I wanted to prevent their story from being my story from being their story, because they see their parents doing all these things and they can do it too. And it stays with them throughout their lifetime. So like building that love for fitness and how it is fun at the beginning, hopefully weave through their whole entire lives.
Kids pretty much do and learn. And it's so important to make sure that we instill really good values and lifelong lessons early, and when they're moldable, yeah, when they're going to listen to you. So I really love that. Yeah. Congratulations on the book. I definitely want you to give a holler out on how the listeners can connect with you online, where we can find your book, where we can buy your book, all that good stuff.
I started an Instagram. It's called I Can Be Fit Kids. And it's just a library of movements that kids are doing all across the world who are diverse and in ability and ages. I wanted to show my kids something else on their screens that they can move. And this is how other kids are moving. So that's where you can find me. And we also have a website called www.icanbefitbook.com. And that's where you can purchase the book. It's on Etsy, Amazon, and my website. Oh, great. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. It's been amazing having you on the podcast today. It's been like an up and down journey, like very cool learning about your birth stories. And I want to thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for sharing your stories.
Awesome what you're doing. So it's so much fun. Thank you for having me.
All right. Wow. Now, before I say goodbye, I do want to remind you, all you moms, maybe you've just had a baby or you're about to have a baby, it's really good to start thinking about what you're going to do to get back into fitness after baby. And maybe you're pregnant, maybe you don't know what's around the corner. If you are a new mom, maybe you're struggling with leakage, diastasis, things like prolapse, or you just want to get back into the gym safely. You want to avoid things like injury down the line. Maybe you want to get stronger, healthier than you were before. So I want to chat about my program, which is called Rebuild After Baby. You can learn more about it on my website at rebuildafterbaby.com. And it is just the whole package on getting you back to harder, high-intensity workouts after baby. It's that missing step that most women miss. They go to the doctor, they say that they're cleared for working out, and then they just go back into the gym. This is the step in between. This is what most women are missing, and this is why a lot of people have injuries, or they've got a mom pooch they can't get rid of. They're wondering why they're leaking. It's because they missed this part. So check out the website, rebuildafterbaby.com. And thank you so much for joining me today on the Strong Moms Fitness Podcast. I'll be back next week with another fun and educational show. So can't wait to see you next time. Have a great day.
Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the Strong Moms Fitness Podcast. Now remember, go subscribe so that you are the first to know as soon as new episodes drop. Also, be sure you don't miss out on your chance to win a free program of your choice from Strong Moms Fitness. All you have to do is leave a 5-star review, screenshot it before you submit, and send it to daisy@strongmomsfitness.com. Your review helps other people find our show. And as a thank you, once a month, we choose the review that makes us all warm and tingly inside and award that lucky lady a free program of their choice. So do it now. It could be you. See you next time, you badass mom, you.